So what do we say? Remember what Amalek did to you when you left Mitzrayim? Asharkarcha baderech, vayizanev becha kol hanechasholom acharecha. And Amalek attacked, Rashi says, vayizanev becha makas zanav. Rashi says, a very perverse and strange thing Amalek did. Chotech milos, they cut off the mila, vizoyrek klape mala, they threw it towards the heavens. But they attacked. Vayizanevacha means that they attacked in a low way. And who did they attack? Kol hanechashalim acharecha. All of the nechashalim, all of the weaklings. Rashi says, those who are chaserei koach, those who are weakened of their strength, machmas chetam, because of their averos. Averos sucks the life out of a person. A person does averos, it makes you weak. So Rashi says, this refers to Amalek's, again, very low way of attacking people who are struggling. Shahaya Anan Poltan, the ones who were kicked out of the Anania Kavar. There were Jews who were trailing behind the rest of the camp. That's called the back of the wagon. And for the time, I guess, the Baal Shem Tov was Megala himself in the world, right? This stretch of period is Torah's Baal Shem, which prepares us for the Torah of Mashiach. So the back of the wagon of the Baal Shem Tov means the very end of this period before we transition to Mashiach. But that's dafka, on the one hand, you can look at it, you can say that's mamish the weakest Jews. Right? We're mamish the lowest. You read us a doris for the lowest generation. We're like those Jews who got kicked out of the Anania Kavod, who are trailing behind the rest of the camp, who are almost in a certain sense ostracized from Klal Yisrael. And Amalek thinks, these Jews I can attack. These aren't real Jews. And of course, the punchline of the whole thing is Vina Hafachu, right? The Vina Hafachu of it all. It was members from Shevet Dan. Shevet Dan is always schlepping along. Shevet Dan was trailing behind, right? When they traveled in the Midbar, so Shevet Dan is the Ma'asef L'chol Amachnos. They're the rear guard. They bring up the rear guard. They trail behind. But here, they were trailing behind because of their averos. So Malik said, these are Jews we can get. No, you can't. That's part of what Purim reveals, that even the lowest Jews, Amalek cannot get a yet. But I think that's the pshat. The back of the wagon, the beginning of the wagon of the Baal Shem Tov is the Baal Shem Tov and the Magid and the Baal Tanya. Mamish big tzaddikim. The back of the wagon of the Baal Shem Tov is us. We're riding with the Baal Shem Tov also. Yeah, Baal Shem Tov sat in the back of the wagon. Yeah. It's Shaiach to the front of the wagon, but it's his wagon, right? If it's his wagon, that means he can sit in the front, he can sit in the back. It's Shaiach to the whole wagon. It's his wagon. So even if you're sitting in the back of the wagon of the Baal Shem Tov, so you're still riding with the Baal Shem Tov. I think that's the part. I gave a woman's shir last night in the neighborhood, so I told the story about Rav Tversky's brother. Moshe Tversky was killed in the Har-Nof 10 years ago. That massacre in Har-Nof. Terrible, terrible incident in Har-Nof. Hashem should avenge his blood. So there's a Maisa, there was a Bachar who came to Toras Moshe, to the yeshiva, to Tomo, and it was his first Zman in yeshiva. And he was having a really hard time. Right beginning of the Elul Zman, he was just having a very hard time, like even just getting adjusted at the beginning of the year. So he says, it's written in the biography of Moshe Tversky. So this Bachar said, he said, I was new to the yeshiva, I was really struggling. And it happened to be that I was the only Kohen in yeshiva that Zman. Very interesting. So he said, so on the Yom Noraim, with Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur coming up, so I got a seat at the front of the Beit. They gave me a seat, mamish, in the front row of the Beis Medrash to make it easy for me to duchen. So he said, I was sitting right next to Rav Tversky. Right? Mamish, like he's in, like in Rosh Hashiva row, you know, in front of the Beis Medrash, this guy. So he says, he sits down, and he hadn't really met Rav Tversky yet, because he wasn't in his shir. He sat down next to him, and Moshe Tversky looks at him, and he says, you know, starts asking him questions, what's your name, you know, where you're from, starts to get to know him a little bit. And then he says to me, he says, the minhag is when you get on a plane and you're on a long flight, Right? You sit down next to some stranger, so you get to know the person a little bit. Right? You're going on a long trip together. You'll be sitting next to each other the next, I don't know, 12 hours. You're flying to Israel, whatever it is. You're going to be seatmates for a while, you know? Have to navigate the armrest. There's a lot to work out, you know, getting up to go to the restroom, v'chulu. So he says, you know, the minhag is when you sit next to someone for a long journey, so it's important. It's important to, you know, to be cordial, to get to know your seatmate. He said, and then Rav Tversky looked at him and he said, we're about to go on a long ride. We're about to go, he's like, prepare for takeoff. We're about to blast off. He says, we're going on a long trip. This is on Yom Kippur. It's the night of Kol Nidre. He says, we're about to go on a long trip to Shemayim, as I said. So he's like, hang on. As guy said, you know, like just, you know, traveling with the Tversky on that Yom Kippur, he said, yeshiva got a lot better after that. You know? So, you know, when you're in the wagon of the Baal Shem Tov, whether you're in the front or the back, you're in the wagon of the Baal Shem Tov. You have a good chavra, good seatmates. I think that's the pshat. But it's very Purim Dik. Right? Chodesh Adar. Adar Sheni Dafka is not just the end of the year, it's the end of the end of the year. Adar is the end of the year. Adar Sheni means we extend the tail end of the year even lower, even longer. So I think that's the pshat. All right, chavra, let's learn. Vayaviyu Asamishkan. Today we're going to tap back into this past Shabbos' parsha with a very significant Purim twist. Vayaviyu es ha-mishkan al Moshe es ha-ovel ves kol kelav k'rasav k'rashav v'richav amudav adenav. They brought the Mishkan to Moshe. Why did they bring the Mishkan to Moshe? What does it mean they brought the Mishkan to Moshe? Explains Rashi, after all of the building and all of the constructing and all of the figuring out how to incorporate all the various donations into the Mishkan, says Rashi, they brought the Mishkan to Moshe, shelo hayu yacholim lakimo. They couldn't stand up the Mishkan. Ulefi shelo asa Moshe shum malacha b'mishkan, hiniach lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu hakamaso. But since Moshe was hands-off in terms of building the Mishkan, Hashem said, I'm saving the best part for you. You're the one who's going to what? To assemble the Mishkan, to actually lift up the Mishkan, to pick up the pieces, the heavy beams, the crushim, they were big, they were heavy. Hashem saw that people couldn't lift them. So Hashem says, Moshe, I saved this final touch, the assembling of the Mishkan for you. Shelo hayachol hakimo shum adam, machmas kovad hakrushim. No one could lift up the beams because of the heaviness of the beams. She'ein koach ba'adam lezakvan, because no one was physically strong enough to lift the beam. Now, why couldn't a whole chevra of people work together to lift the beam? I don't know. Maybe it was still too heavy. Sounds like it was miraculously heavy, that Hashem wanted it to be left for Moshe. Says Rashi, Moshe had mido. So Moshe was the one who actually stood up the crushim, the beams of the Mishkan. Amar Moshe lefnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Eich efshar hakamasa al yedei adam. So Moshe turns to the Ribono Shel Olam and says, it's not physically possible to lift such a heavy beam. How could you expect a human being to lift such a heavy beam? Amar lo, asok ata biyadcha. You do what you can, Moshe Rabbeinu. You busy yourself, right? Do what's in your hand. Do what you can. V'nira kemakimo, and it'll look like you're the one who's picking up this beam. Everyone will be ooing and aahing. Wow, Moshe, look at Moshe's strength. V'hu niskaf v'kameila, but really the beam will stand up on its own. Hashem says, oh, really, I'll be the one, wink, wink, I'll be the one to lift up the beam. And that's what the pasuk means when it says, Hukam HaMishkan, the Mishkan stood up, almost sounds like it stood up on its own, says Rashi, yes, Hukam Eilav, it stood up on its own. If you were standing there, it would look like Moshe was lifting the beams, but Be'emes, the beams were standing up on their own. In other words, HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself was lifting the beams. Chav, I ask a simple kash on this Rashi. How did Rashi start? How did Rashi begin? Rashi said what? No one was able to do it. And Hashem Dafka left what? The last step of the Mishkan for Moshe to do so that Moshe could have a chelik in the Mishkan. Now what's the kasha though? So of course he didn't really do it. He didn't really do it. Right? Hashem left it for Moshe that Moshe should be able to do something. But wink, wink, Moshe didn't actually do it. Hukam Eilav. The end of the Rashi says that the Mishkan stood itself up. Right? So it's a good kasha. So what's the pshat? So what does it mean that Moshe, Moshe was the one who assembled the Mishkan? No, it's not true. The Mishkan assembled itself. Okay, kasha number one. To ask further, we know that Moshe Rabbeinu struggled with a number of things in terms of fulfilling the Dvar Hashem over the course of his life. The Gemara in Menachos says, Tana Debei Rabbi Yishmael, Shlosha Dvarim Hayu Koshin Lo Lamosha, Acheheru Lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu Batzbo. There were three things that Moshe did not know how to do. Until HaKadosh Baruch Hu pointed with his finger, where Hashem very precisely guided him and directed him. What were those three things? Ve'eluhein, Menorah, V'rosh Chodesh, U'shratzim. Moshe did not know how to make the menorah. Moshe did not know how to look at the moon and figure out if, in fact, it's a new moon to declare Rosh Chodesh. HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem, right? And Shratzim. Moshe wasn't sure when Hashem said there's certain types of creatures, bugs, things that you're not allowed to eat. These are the Tameh ones. Moshe said, well, I need a lesson in what's what. Right? There's certain grasshoppers that are kosher. There are other types of bugs and creatures that are not kosher. Moshe said, I need a lesson. I'm not holding in all the different little shruts and all the different creepy crawling creatures. Says the Gemara, Menorah dichsev v'zeh ma'aseh ha-menorah. Whenever it says zeh, it usually means that you're pointing to something, right? Like by Kriyas Yamsuf, zeh keli v'anveyu, Rashi says. They were pointing to the Shechina. So there were three things Moshe says, Hashem, show me how to do it. Hashem said, zeh ma'aseh ha-menorah. This is how you make the menorah. By Rosh Chodesh, what does it say? HaChodesh HaZeh Lachem. This is what the new moon looks like. Moshe's like, I don't get it. This is very complicated. Kiddush HaChodesh. Very hard to figure out how to interpret the moon. Hashem says, I'll show you. It's like Zeh. It's like this. HaChodesh HaZeh Lachem Rosh Chodashim. By the Shratzim, when it came to Shratzim, Dichsiv V'Zeh Lachem HaTameh. Zeh Lachem HaTameh. This. Like this. This is what's not kosher. This is what is kosher. Hashem pointed things out. Some say even Hilchos Shechita, Shenemar v'zeh asher tasal mizbeach, like this you shall bring upon the mizbeach. Tosfos over there in Menachos asked the question, you're thinking probably of another Rashi we had not so long ago, right? When Hashem showed Moshe a matbeah shel esh. Moshe wasn't sure exactly what the shekel is supposed to look like. And Hashem showed him the shekel and said, kizeh yitnu, like this they should donate the shekel to the Mishkan. So I'll just point out parenthetically, the Vilna Gaon, in the writings of the Vilna Gaon, we find this idea. Usually in the writings of the Gra, it says there were three things that Moshe Rabbeinu struggled with. The three things were, again, you have the Gemara here, Menorah, Rosh Chodesh, and Shratzim. The Vilna Gaon says, Menorah, Chodesh, HaChodesh, and Shkalim. Again, Tosfos and Menachos asked that question. Here we see Shechita is also on the list, but the Vilna Gaon points out something amazing. The Vilna Gaon says that Menorah, Shkalim, or Shratzim, or Shechita, and HaChodesh, because HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem, is Rashi Tevos Moshe. Mem, Shin, Hey. Menorah, Shkalim, Shratzim, Shechita, whatever Shin you want to use, and Hey is HaChodesh Hazeh, right? HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem. What's the pshat? What would you say the pshat is? That Moshe's name alludes to the three things that he struggled with. I'll even add to something the Vilna Gaon said, because if you look carefully, you'll notice that also the Sofei Tevos also spell Moshe. Think about it for a second. Menorah ends in a hey. Right? Shkalim or Shratzim end in a mem. And what's the third one? HaChodesh ends in a shin. So the last letters are also Moshe. It's almost like it says Moshe, Moshe. Which, by the way, there are four people in Tanakh who are called by a double name, where their name is said twice in a row. And the best one on that list is who? Moshe, Moshe. Who are the other ones? Avram, Avram. Yaakov, Yaakov. Shmuel, Shmuel. And Moshe, Moshe. The only one that doesn't have a break in between is Moshe, Moshe. Right? What's the pshat? What does Rashi say anytime someone's called by a double name in Tanakh? What does Rashi say? It's a chavivus, right? Hashem loves you. He says, Moshe, Moshe. Hashem says your name twice. Because Hashem really, right? Hashem loves you extra, so he says your name twice. So I want to just add, isn't that interesting? That Dafka, the three things that Moshe struggled with, Dafka alludes to the chavivus of Moshe Rabbeinu, Moshe, Moshe. It's as if Hashem is saying, your struggles are what make you great. What? Yeah. The chavivus of a person You want to bring out the fullness of your name? Be willing to struggle. Moshe Rabbeinu could have said, listen, I got enough accomplishments. I want to focus on that. Hashem said, no. You know what defines you? The things that are hard for you. The things that you have to ask Hashem for help with. That's okay. That brings out a certain beauty, a depth of a person. It's a beautiful thing. It's mamash a beautiful thing. Okay, that's all, again, that's all in parentheses. But again, what's the pshat that Moshe struggled with these things? Let's just use the menorah since it's the first one on the list. Remember the end of the story with the menorah? How was the menorah made in the end? What does Rashi say? All right, he took the menorah. He took a block of gold. He wasn't sure how to make this menorah out of a single piece of gold. Hashem said, throw it into the fire and what? It'll make itself. Just like we learned in this Rashi, the Mishkan erected itself. It stood itself up. Moshe has to just like pretend to do his part, and it happens on its own. What's the pshat behind that? Why did it come about that way? Why was the Mishkan, right, built on its own? The menorah, let's say, as representative of the kalim of the Mishkan, they were created also on their own. What's the secret of this? Okay, kasha number two. Question number three, Chav. Question number three. Now we get a little bit of Purim. V'haya kasher yarim Moshe yado. We go to the end of Parshas B'shalach. When Moshe Rabbeinu raises up his hands, v'gavar Yisrael, v'kasher yaniach yado. When Moshe lowers his hands, v'gavar Amalek. And then Amalek is strengthened. Says the Mishnah in the third parak of Rosh Hashanah, Chav Tesam and Aleph, v'haya kasher Yarim Moshe Yadav Agavar Yisrael, asks the Mishnah in source number 5, V'chi Yadav Shal Moshe Osos Milchama O Shovros Milchama. Do the hands of Moshe make war or break war? When Moshe's hands are up, then they win the war. When Moshe's hands are down, then they lose the war. What's the pshat? Says the Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah, El Lomer Lachad comes to teach us. Kol Zman Chay Yisrael Mistaklin Klapi Mala U'mishavden Aslivam Lavim Shvashamayim. When the Jews are looking up, and they're what? And they're subjugating their hearts to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hayu Mizgabrim, then they win. V'im Lav, but if you're not looking up, if you're looking down, then what? Then Hayu Noflim. Okay, right? When you're locked into Hashem, so you win. And when you look down, you lose. Where is Moshe standing? Moshe standing, Rosh HaGivah. Moshe's standing already above the crowd, right? The battle's taking place down below. Moshe's already up above. So I'll ask you a simple question. What difference does it make where Moshe's hands are? Moshe's hands are down, Moshe's hands are up. Either way, if you're looking up, if you're looking towards Moshe, so you're looking up, right? I need to look up at Moshe, and Moshe has to stretch his hands up. You hear the kasha? The point of the Mishnah is that as long as the Jews are looking up, so then, and that's reminding them that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is providing for them, as opposed to looking down and saying, you know, I'm providing for myself, so then they win the war. So what do I need the additional, kasher Yarim Moshe Yado, that Moshe additionally raised his hands? Why is that an important part? Again, if the goal is to just look up, Moshe's already above the crowd. Moshe's already Nitzav Al Rosh HaGivah. He's already standing on top of the mountain, so to speak. Yeah. Okay, so I mean, even Moshe has to look up, right? This is from, okay. Okay, all right. Good start. We'll add a little more to that. And let's ask just a little bit more. Let's go a little bit deeper. Okay? A medrash from also this past week's parsha. Eila fakudeh ha-mishkan, mishkan ha-edus. Right? This is the calculation, the enumeration of the mishkan. The mishkan's called mishkan ha-edus, the mishkan of testimony. Maybe that's one way to translate it. What is the Mishkan testifying to? Says the Medrash in source number 6, Eidus l'chol bai olam. It's a testimony for all the peoples of the world. Shenimcho lehem al maisa egel. You know what the Mishkan comes to testify to? The Mishkan comes to declare that even though we messed up terribly with the Chet Egel, you should know that we worked it out with Hashem. Hashem forgave us. So I'll ask, just very simply, again, how is the Mishkan a tikkun for the Chet HaEgel? So let's review. What do we have so far? First, we had question number one was what is Rashi in source number two. On the one hand, Moshe Rabbeinu is the one who's what? Who's being given the zchus to erect the Mishkan, to lift up the heavy beams that no one else could lift. But so, of course, Rashi says, but Moshe couldn't lift the beams either. and Hashem lifted it for him. Hukam me'elav. The Mishkan stood up on its own. So what does that mean? Hashem honored Moshe with the privilege of assembling the Mishkan. Right? It doesn't seem like Moshe could actually do it. The same thing is true when it comes to other things in the Mishkan, other things that Moshe struggled with, right? He couldn't figure out how to make the menorah either, the kalim of the Mishkan, let's say embodied by the menorah. Moshe Rabbeinu also struggled. Hashem says, don't worry, you throw it into the fire and I'll do it for you. What was Moshe struggling with, and why did the menorah have to come about in such a way? Then we asked, why does Moshe need to raise his hands? If the whole point is that as long as the Jews are looking up towards Hashem, they win the battle. So if Moshe is already standing above them, so why do additionally we need Moshe to raise his hands while standing above the crowd? Why is that so significant? The Torah emphasized that when Moshe's hands are up, they win the battle. It just seems as long as Klal Yisrael is looking up, they win the battle. And lastly, we asked on the Medrash, the short little line from the Medrash in source number 6, right, which tells us that the Mishkan is a tikkun for Chet HaEgel. We want to understand why. How is the Mishkan affixing for the Chet HaEgel? Okay, so Chevra, we'll ask one final question in source number 7, and that's a pasuk in Tehillim. It says, Achaz Dibur Elokim, Shtayim Zu Shamati, Ki Oz Lelokim. Hashem said one thing, but I heard two things, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu has Oz, Hashem has great strength. What did David HaMelech mean by that? Achaz Dibur Elokim, Shtayim Zu Shamati. Right? We know that sometimes Hashem says one thing and we hear it as two things. Like Hashem said, Zachor v'shamor b'dibur echad. Right? Is that what this is referencing? Hashem can say two things at once? And that's a display of God's strength, of God's might? And then David HaMelech follows it up with another pasuk, which we also don't really understand. Ulacha Hashem chased. Hashem, you are so kind. You know why you're so kind, Hashem? Ki ata sishalem l'ish k'maseyu. Because you reward a person for his actions. So all this far I'm asking on this pasuk, why is that kindness? If I hire you to come, I don't know, I have a leaky faucet, and I hire you to come as a plumber to fix it, right? And then afterwards I pay you for your work. And you say to me, wow, I want to thank you. You're so gracious. You're so generous. Well, not so generous. I paid you for your work. Lecha Hashem chased, lecha Adonai chased, ki atas hashalim liish k'maaseyu. Hashem, you're so kind. You pay people for the work. Why is that kind? That's midas hadin. That's not a chesed. I work and I earn. That's not a chesed. What does David HaMelech mean? Hashem, you're so, a display of your chesed is your willingness to pay people for the job that they do? I don't understand. How could that be? Okay, so let's get to some answers. Yeah.
I think a big thing that applies to all the questions is that everything we do is kind of symbolic and just showing that we care, but it doesn't have like a real impact. It's more just for us to show that we're doing
it. Okay, good. So let's go there and let's realize that in some ways that's the essence of prayer. That is the essence of the answer to all the questions. That is, in many ways, the essence of the avodah of Purim. Chevra, if we have a building project, yeah? Let's say we decided, you know, right? Let's say we all went to the same shul, and we decided, you know what, we're going to do a fundraiser for our shul, and we're going to, we're going to enhance the shul, or redo the shul, whatever it is. Okay? There's three different types of people who are going to play a role in making the fundraiser happen, in making the project happen. There's people who give money. There's people who donate. There's people who are actually going to build the shul. Right? And then you need a person who has a vision for the shul. Right? Let's call them donors, doers, right? And a visionary. You need someone to give the money. You need someone to actually physically construct the shul, the new shul. But you also need someone who has a vision, right? It's not just manual labor. You have to have a picture of what does the shul need? What's the right way to build it? How much space to allocate? What should we do? If you were to ask each of those three individuals or groups, who played the most significant role in building the shul? So each one could claim, it's me. Without the money, it's nothing to talk about. Right? Well, if you have the money, that's nice, but the money doesn't get us, a new base medrash. A new social hall, right? It doesn't redo the women's section, right? You need someone to physically build it. And the third group says, without our vision, for where the community is heading and what the shul should look like, and even deciding to have a fundraiser and coming up with a whole strategy, none of this ever would have gotten off the ground to begin with either. So each one, the donors think we're most responsible for building the shul. And the person who actually sees the project through and does it, right? The person who's oisek in the binyan itself, they think, well, there's physically no building without me. Right? And the visionary says, but none of you would have ever dreamt of having a shul if not for my grand vision and guiding the project from beginning to end. None of the money would have come in, and none of we never would have hired the right architect, never would have designed the shul the right way. Each person, in their own way, thinks that they're the one who built the shul. But chevra, in life, like Ezra Shmuel said, so precisely, David HaMelech says the following. David HaMelech says in the bottom source on side one of the page, Ekra lelokim elyon. The truth is, I call out to you, Hashem, Lakel Gomer Alai. Lakel Gomer Alai. I can't actually complete anything. I can't accomplish anything. I can, so to speak, start the project. I can imagine that I'm going to do my thing. I'm going to make it happen. But until Hashem signs off on it, Lakel Gomer Alai, until Hashem finishes me off, Kadosh Baruch Hu finishes the project, if Hashem doesn't put his signature, right? If Hashem doesn't put his stamp of approval, nothing happens. Lakel Gomer Alai. Hashem, you complete me. I couldn't accomplish anything without you. And sometimes we lose sight of that. Sometimes we think that, no. Hashem, you got me started. And now I'll take it from here. I don't need thanks for getting me rolling. You made me. Great. I'll take it from here. In terms of my parnasa, I'll take it from here. In terms of my health, you know, I'll take it from here. In terms of my opportunities in life, right, what I do, I got it. I don't need Hashem, you know, in my space all the time. I appreciate you got me started. You gave me the initial investment for the startup. I got it. I'll take it from here. And that's a terrible mistake. And sometimes we do that even in holy things. Sometimes we think, you know, Hashem, I needed your help when I like really started. I needed to feel HaKadosh Baruch Hu by my side when I was first becoming inspired, but now like I'm an inspired Jew, and I don't like I can, you know, I can do my avodah without you. Like I used to need more help when I was learning, but now I know how to learn, so like I don't need Hashem's help with this next tosos because like now I know how to learn tosos. That's a terrible danger and a terrible mistake. What was Chet HaEgel? Let's learn Chet HaEgel in the most positive way that we can. You know what Chet HaEgel was? Chet HaEgel was Klal Yisrael saying, we want to make a makom of Hashras HaShechina. We want something tangible. I know it sounds twisted and crazy and who it was and what how it happened, right? But on a certain level, if we're Malam Yitzchus and what they were trying to do, they wanted a space, an object, a something, not so different than the Mishkan, although, again, B'chitzoni is radically different than the Mishkan. But what's the point of the Mishkan? No? Yaakov Yudah, why do we have a Mishkan? You make a mishkan to what? So that there should be presence of Hashem in your midst. What was the ego? It was the same idea. They wanted something tangible to be able to, right? Yeah, why it came out the way it came out and how it came about, obviously it's all a terrible tragedy. But the mistake was that they thought we're gonna make a something, right? And the truth is, we don't make a nothing in this world. We can't make anything in this world. Everything has to have the stamp, the approval of a Kodesh Baruch Hu, Lakel Gomer Alai. Says the Beis Halevi in source number 9. Now we understand why in this past week's Parsha, over and over and over again, we learned it on Thursday, in the Agudat Kallah, it's everything is what? Everything has to be what? Kasher Tziva Hashem. Kasher Tziva Hashem is Moshe. Kasher Tziva Hashem Kein Asu. Over and over and over again. It's always what? For each detail, it's with the stamp and the approval of Hashem. Why? I'm building a holy space. I can do this. Hashem's like, you can't do anything. We have to remember, we can't do anything. We certainly can't have, you know, Olam Haza success without Hashem. We can't have financial success. We can't breathe without Hashem. We can't walk without Hashem. We can't do anything physical without Hashem, but we also can't do anything spiritual without Hashem. Everything happens with Hashem by our side. Says the Beis Halevi, Uvezeh Navin Mad Parshas Pekude, Da'al Kol Prat Uprat, Va'al Maisa U Maisa Sha'asu B'Mishkan. Every single thing that happened in the Mishkan. over and over and over again. Kosam mefurash kasher tziva Hashem es Moshe. V'tevos halalu, and this phrase, these words, k'suvim k'ma'at b'chol pasuk u'pasuk. Sheba'osa parsha v'halo davar. That's an unusual thing. All right, we got it. Kasher tziva Hashem, we got it. No, by each step of the way, kasher tziva Hashem, kasher tziva Hashem, kasher tziva Hashem. Says Rav Yosef Dov Halevi Soloveitchik, Soloveitchik's great-grandfather, who he was named for, the Rav's great-grandfather, the original Rav Yosef Dov Halevi Soloveitchik. He says, Halo Davarhu, it's a wondrous thing. Right? That's interesting. Over and over and over again, Parshas Pekudim, more than any other Parsha, Kasher Tziva Hashem, Kasher Tziva Hashem, Kasher Tziva Hashem. Why? Raka Inyan, middle of the third line. Raka Inyan de Maisa HaMishkan HaReba LeChaper Aleim HaMaisa HaEgel. Going back to our Medrash that told us explicitly that the Mishkan is somehow supposed to fix the Egel. What happened by the Egel? They got a little too hasty by the Egel. They were a little too self-confident by the Egel. They started telling Aaron how things ought to be. They didn't ask Aaron what to do. They decided this is what we need to do. Right? They sinned with their jewelry. Right? The Medrash is drawing a parallel. The same way that they donated so generously to the Egel, they had to donate to the Mishkan as a tikkun for the Egel. But says the Beis Halevi, what was the sin? The cave and the ikar chetam be'egel. They thought, we have a plan, we have mahalich, Moshe's missing, here's what we're going to do. They got a little too self-confident with their own chachma, their own wisdom, their own understanding. Lasos al pi yiddi asam v'chachmasam. We're smart enough to do this on our own. We know how to do this. We don't need to wait for a Moshe Rabbeinu to ask him how to do it. We don't need to ask Aaron. We don't need to ask the Zakenim. All of a sudden, there was like this you know, rebellion from the masses. This you know, everyone just decided, this is what we need. This is what we need. Asher lo nitzavu v'lav, but they weren't commanded to do this at all. V'leze b'maisa ha-mishkan, sheba l'chaper, nemer al kol asher osu kasher tziva Hashem. Therefore, the Mishkan, which is coming to fix that, every step of the way, you got to sign off. You need Hashem's approval. You need to realize that you can't build anything. You will not finish anything. Lakel gomer alai. You could pretend to do your part, but you have to know, and it's very humbling, but it's also very inspiring, to know that Hashem does everything. I have to pretend to do it. I have to pretend to assemble the Mishkan, going back to our first Rashi. Moshe Rabbeinu has to fake it. He has to pretend to assemble the Mishkan. He has to pretend to assemble the Mishkan. Klomar, da'agam de'vitzalol ha'yodeya litzarif osios sh'nivra b'hem shemayim v'aretz. That's our Gemara in Brachos Daf Nun Hei. That even though b'tzalel, b'tzel kel, a reflection of Hashem, the shadow of Hashem, b'tzel kel, b'tzalel, knew how to combine the letters of creation. He knew how to do all sorts of wondrous things. B'tzalel was a genius, an incredible artist, an incredible architect. He knew all the cheshbonos and the calculations, the secret of intentions. He knew it all. And yet, what do you see by the Mishkan? Over and over and over again. You don't make a move without Hashem. Kasher tziva Hashem. Kasher tziva Hashem. Kasher tziva Hashem es Moshe. And my friends, that's the tikkun for the ego. Rak kasher tziva Hashem. V'niskavnu rak laso tzivuyo v'rtzono. Yizbarach. I don't care what you think makes sense. Right? When you surrender your will to Hashem and you realize that my life is one big kasher tziva Hashem, zeo shekiper lehem al chetego. That's the tikkun for chetego. The way to play the game is the following. We pretend to do, but we know that Hashem finishes the job. And what does our Gemara say in Brachos and Daf Yud Beis? Hakol holech acher hachitum. Everything goes by the finisher. Whoever finishes the job gets the credit. You have Rashi like that. You have many Mamari Chazal like that. Whoever completes the task gets the credit for it. Whoever sees the job to the end. So we have donors to the Mishkan. We have builders of the Mishkan. And we have a visionary for the Mishkan. And everyone's role is important. and we try our best, we're mishtadel, but at the end of the day, when it's time to build the Mishkan, Hashem says, I saved the best for last. Moshe Rabbeinu, you're going to finish the Mishkan. Finish the Mishkan, Rashi told us the Mishkan stood up on its own. Hukam HaMishkan, it stood up on its own. But Hashem was making a point. Dafka, I think Dafka, you could say through Moshe Rabbeinu, who's Anav Mikol Adam. Moshe on the one hand is the greatest, right? Moshe's the king, he's the king of Klal Yisrael, he's the best. And yet, Dafka Moshe is so humble that Moshe says, I want to show you in the final step of the Mishkan, I'm going to show you that none of us could build this Mishkan. And Moshe says, I'll show you, this is how we do it. I fake it, I pretend to lift the beams, and Hukam HaMishkan Me'elav. And the Mishkan stands up on its own. That's what David HaMelech is saying. Lakel Gomer Alai. The last three words on the first side of the page, right? Ekra Lelukim Elyon. Lakel Gomer Alai. I saw a Gevaldik Remez from Rav Ephraim Twersky Shlita from Chicago. He says, you know what the mistake of the Hegel was? The way it's supposed to be is, again, we do our part, we pretend to be Mishtadel, and Hashem, of course, signs off and finishes the job, sees it through to completion. The mistake of the Hegel is to do the exact opposite, to think that what? We go to Tati, we go to Avinu Shavashamayim. We say, Hashem, you give us a little loan called life, and we'll take it from here. We'll finish the job for you. Hashem, well, you got us started, but we get the credit because we're the ones who are finishing the job. You know what that's called? That's taking David HaMelech's expression and flipping it around. Alai gomer lakel. I finish for you, Hashem. Not lakel gomer alai. Alai gomer lakel. However, you know what happens when alai, you point to yourself and you say, alai gomer lakel? Who sees it? Rashi Tevos Egel, exactly. Alai gomer lakel is Rashi Tevos Egel. You don't finish for Hashem. That's called an Egel. Hashem finishes the job for you. We have to do our part to be Mishtadel. Yes, we play the game. We donate and we do and we try to make it happen 100%. But at the end of the day, when it comes to what? When it comes to Hakamas HaMishkan, when it comes to standing up, standing up the Mishkan, Hashem says, I finished the job. Moshe Rabbeinu is told, Machas is a shekel. And Moshe Rabbeinu says, I don't understand Machas is a shekel. Moshe Rabbeinu understood what Machas is a shekel was. Well, what's that whole give and take? Okay, I'll show you. This is what it looks like. The whole point HaKadosh Baruch Hu was saying is, remind Klal Yisrael, Machas is a shekel. They're only half the shekel. You do the first half of the shekel. But then Hashem says, Matbeah Shal Eish. I provide the other half of the shekel. Comes to the Kalim of the Mishkan, the menorah, the beautiful menorah. The menorah which is representative of really our ruchnius. It's Torah, the menorah, right? Kiner mitzvah b'Torah or. So a person looks at the menorah and says, the right attitude is, I can't make this menorah on my own. And Hashem says, right, Moshe, good. Try your best to make the menorah. But then, like Rashi says, throw it into the fire, and the menorah made itself. So from the structure, from the building of the Mishkan, Hashem made the Mishkan. The Kalim of the Mishkan, Hashem made the Kalim of the Mishkan. The donations of the Mishkan, those shkalim, right, which are for the part of, the truma to the Mishkan, the donation to the Mishkan, Hashem says, I also complete that. You're only half a shekel. I finished the job. I'm the one who's responsible for finishing the job. However, that's the humility. That's the humility that a Jew is supposed to live with. So when the Mishkan is finally finished, Moshe Rabbeinu gives a bracha to Klal Yisrael. Vayar Moshe, source number 10, is Kol HaMalacha. Vine Osu Osa Kasher Tziva Hashem. Moshe takes a step back after he just, pretended to lift up the krushim, which were too heavy, of course, to be lifted. But Hashem says, Moshe, this is your chelek, right? This is special for you, even though, of course, it's still really Hashem doing that. Moshe looks at all the malacha, and he sees that it's all been done. Kasher tziva Hashem kein asu, vayivarech osa Moshe. And Moshe gives Klal Yisrael a bracha. What was the bracha Moshe gave Klal Yisrael? Every one of the most beautiful brachas you can give a person. It says Rashi, Amar Lehem, based on the Medrash. Amar Lehem, Yehi Ratzon, may it be His will, Shetishra Shechina, B'maasei Yedeichem. I give you a bracha, Klal Yisrael, that the Shechina should always what? Reside in the work of your hands. What does that mean? V'hi Noam Hashem Elokeinu Aleinu B'chulu. What's the pshat? What did Moshe say to them? The Shechina should reside on the work of your hands. However, the biggest danger that we have And it's really where Amalek comes from. It's the world of Yadayim Yaday Esav. It's the hands of Esav. It's Kochi Va'otzem Yadi. It's my efforts. It's my accomplishments. It's me. Hashem, I'm not going to deny you got me started, but Alai Gomer Lakel. Hashem, I'm going to take it from here. That's called ego. Even if you're purely motivated, you're going to do good. You're going to do good for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Hashem says, don't get ahead of yourself. Realize that even whatever you think you're doing for me, I'm really doing it through you. And that's called Tishra Shechina B'Maisi Yadechem. That the Shechina should be found in the work of your hands. Yes, you have to work. You got to do. But you should know these hands are not really yours. So that answers our question. Moshe Rabbeinu is standing above Klal Yisrael. And yet the Pasuk still makes a point that Moshe Rabbeinu, who's already looking up, and Klal Yisrael is looking up to Moshe, but he has to take his hands and raise them up. Why? They're already looking up. The Mishnah says, as long as they're looking up, they're going to win the war. But why is it dependent upon Moshe's hands up or down? Because again, do I view my hands as just an extension of you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Or do I think, listen, you gave me the hands, but now they're my hands, right? They're my hands below. They're my hands in this world below. And that's why this Shabbos, when we fight against the Amalek, when we eradicate a Amalek, what does it say? We have to eradicate a Amalek where? Mitachas HaShemayim. We have to eradicate a Amalek mitachas HaShemayim. It's Hashem, tomorrow night when we forbrain with the Rubenstein, depending on the time, if I speak, I'm going to share more on this inyan. On that bond between the world above and the world below, and how it relates to Purim. But very simply, Tachas HaShemayim, the whole Indian of Amalek is what? Is Amalek says, Hashem, you're up there, right? And in this world below, called Tachas HaShemayim, this is my playground. I do what I want down here. That's called Yadayim Yidei Esav. I was thinking my hands, my actions, are independent from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So Timcha Azecher Amalek, eradicate Amalek where? Mitachas HaShemayim. To think that this world is on its own, that I could somehow do my own thing, that's a perversion. And that's what it really means, again, going back to the words of David HaMelech again, go back to source number 7. Achaz diber elokim, shtayim zu shamati, ki oz le'elokim. U'lecha adonai chosed ki atos eshalim le'ish k'maaseh. Let's do the second pasuk first, it's easier. What does it mean? We ask the question, why is it a chesed that Hashem pays us for our actions? We earned it. The answer is no, we didn't. Because we didn't really do anything. It's a chesed. Wow, David HaMelech says, Hashem, it's such a chesed that you reward us for pretending to help you. That's really what we're doing. Because lakel gomer alai, you finished the job. And that's what it means. Achaz diber alokim shtayim zu shamati. Hashem said, you know, one thing. Hashem gave you a singular task. But if I'm listening deeply, I know shtayim zu shamati. I'm not doing this on my own. It's not me on my own. Hashem Baruch Hu is with me. We're standing together, side by side. Ki oz le'elokim. Because Hashem, if I'm lucky, Hashem chooses to display His strength through me. But don't think that Hashem got me started and I'm going to finish the job on my own. There's no such thing as that. And therefore, when I complete the job and Hashem gives me a schar, He gives me a reward, I have to say thank you. What a chesed. Because lakel gomer alai. Hashem, you finish the job for me. Chever, I think it's very obvious what this has to do with Purim. But just to say it out, and to be mechazek us. Purim is the day of the year where it's in many ways easiest to be a Jew. If you're willing to just let go a little bit. It's very scary sometimes to rely on Hashem. I feel like it negates my sense of self. Right? But it's really the opposite. It's mamash the opposite. You know, to use the Baal Tanya's mashal of the ray of light of the sun shining down in this world. Right? Picturing that ray as emerging from the sun versus imagining that ray when it's still contained within the ball of the sun. So on the one hand, when that ray of light is back within the ball of the sun, I don't see it as a ray anymore. It doesn't have an independent existence. But is it better or worse for the ray? Better, you know why? Because it's one. It becomes the sun. If every one of us is a drop of water, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu was an ocean, kiviyachol, right? The thought of taking my drop and throwing it back into the ocean is very scary. You know why? Because I'm not going to be able to identify it. It's batel. It ceases to exist. It's nullified to the ocean. So on the one hand, that's terrifying for a person. It's going to make me so small. I'm going to cease to exist if I give myself over to Hashem. That's one way to look at it. That's the haughty Amalek way to look at it. You know what the humble Yiddish Jewish way to look at it is? The proper way to look at it is, I become one with the ocean. I remind myself that I'm part of the ocean. I am the ocean. Right? I don't have an independent existence. So this ability to let go, to get rid of that chachma that led to the ego. Chachmasim v'yidiyasim. Right? That's what we're trying to tap into on Purim. We're trying to get to a place called Ad Lo Yada. And it's really that easy. It's really, really that easy. The Eish Kodesh, our Rebbe, the Holy Piazetz, the Rebbe. Picture's on the wall right over here. The Heilige Eish Kodesh writes, Purim 1940. Isa b'tikunei Zohar, in source number 12. It says in Tikunei Zohar, Kadosh, Shepurim ki Yom Kippurim. Everyone knows that Purim is like Yom Kippur. Right? Or Yom Kippur, better said, is like Purim. So what does that mean? So he says, I'll tell you what it means. V'chein gam mimala lamata. K'mo sheyom ha-kippurim. Just like on Yom Kippur. What does it take to receive the kapara of Yom Kippur? The Gemara says, Itzumo shel yom mechaper. The very essence of the day cleanses. Just being alive in the world, being a yid on Yom Kippur, that automatically cleanses a person. Vafilim lo hishlim kol tshuvaso. Omer Rebbe shemachaper lo. That even if a person feels at the end of Yom Kippur, I didn't do enough, I couldn't finish the job. There's more to be said. There's more tefillos to be davened. There's more ashanu bagadnus, you know? There's more alchet shechatanu lefanecha. I could have said it better. I could have said it more real. Yom Kippur says to us, relax, buddy. I got this. Hashem's like, I got it. Itzumo shel yom mechaper. The day itself is healing, is cleansing. So if that's true on Yom Kippur, says the Holy Piazetz Rebbe, speaking to Jews in the Warsaw Ghetto, who are not feeling particularly into Purim, given the events of recent months and years in their life, and their suffering and their pain, and their brokenness, says the Rebbe, relax. You're worried you're not going to be able to perform properly on Purim. You don't have to perform on Purim. You don't have to do anything. The same way that Yom Kippur is mechaper for you, it takes care of you, kein gam b'Purim. Just let go. Af shelo haya ha'ish ha'yisraeli b'simcha kafi shetzarach lechios. A person says, I'm not on the madrega of simcha that I'm supposed to be living with. U'memeila kol avodaso shebapurim lo ha'isa b'shleimos. I don't feel, and we all feel this at the end of Purim, and it's mamish haman trying to creep back in. How was Purim? It was great, but there was one like Sud that I was trying to make it to, and I couldn't make it there, and I wanted to be here and there at the same time, and I wanted to. Right, I was hoping to go. Right, there's always like this feeling like, oh, Purim was too quick; it went by so fast. Right. Or I fell asleep in the middle of the Sud, and I wish I missed out. I heard a person can live with that regret that I wasn't able to complete the job, to finish the task. That's ego. That need to finish the task. I need to control the situation. That's called Machsheves Haman. That's what the Megillah calls Machsheves Haman, the ideology, the thinking of Haman. A person has to realize that Purim, even if he wasn't as simchadik, or he didn't feel his Purim was as shalem as it could have been or should have been, Mikol Makom HaYeshua VaHaSimcha SheBePurim Poel Al Yisrael Gamata Poel Vosa. Purim knows how to work its magic. The same way that Yom Kippur knows exactly how to be Yom Kippur. So Purim knows mamish how to be Purim. It doesn't need your help. It requires you the opposite, ad lo yada. Not to be so filled with seichel and chachma and understanding. Just let go a little bit. Fall back into the hands of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Be so mechal a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Right? Twice such an important day like we learned, the day of davening. Because davening means I'm dependent upon you, Hashem. It's an expression of my dependency. I'm not okay on my own. I need your help every step of the way. I mamish need your help every step of the way. I'm debating if we should do the last three sources or we should just stop now. It's mamish like a little bit of another inyan. I'll try to do it quickly because it's nogeya to this year. Yeah.
Can you say that also this drop of water analogy is like a drop of water on its own eventually dries out?
Yeah. That's a good way to say it.
But the drop of water is the notion of us,
right? Right.
So you submit to something greater than yourself.
Very interesting. Very interesting.
If you think everything is yourself and you are the source of all.
That's right. That drop of water that wants an independent existence is eventually going to evaporate and truly disappear. If he converges with the ocean, right, then he's never going to dry out. Never going to disappear. Very nice. Very nice. Let's add one more nakuda, because again, it's hard sometimes to just let go. It's hard to feel dependent, right? Again, if I do it with humility and if I overcome that gaiva of a malik, it's such a simcha. No, it's such a simcha to know that I don't have to do anything to be matzliach. Not that I shouldn't do anything. Be careful. Make sure you understand in a clear way. Not saying you shouldn't do anything. They built the Mishkan. Klal Yisrael worked really hard on the Mishkan. But at the end, the simcha of the Mishkan is, all right, Hashem built the Mishkan for us. Which means Hashem's taking care of us. That should be the biggest source of simcha. That should remove all of our fears and all of our anxieties. To know that Hashem is with us. There's nothing I can do independently. That's not me being robbed of my sense of self. That's just being part of something bigger. Right? Being part of something bigger than myself. It says in Kohelis, Kol amal ha'adam lefihu, v'gam ha'nefesh lo simale. It's a beautiful pasuk. It means a lot of things. We'll learn it the way that Chazal learned it in the Medrash Kohelis Rabbah. Kol amal ha'adam lefihu. All of man's amelus, all of his work, is lefihu. Is what? It's lefihu. It's for his. It's the work of. The work is the work of speech. It's lip service. What does that mean? V'gam ha'nefesh lo simale. And the soul is never satisfied. You can learn this in a very gashmiistic way, that a person is busy working with his mouth, he's eating all the time, and yet the whatever he's searching for, whatever fill he's trying to get by consuming, right? Eating is a very gashmiistic thing. So whatever he's consuming, lo timale, he'll never be satisfied by that. In other words, you could say, Pasha Pshat, Kohelis is saying, Kedarko, Musar Shmus, if you think you're just going to keep eating and keep fressing away, and eating again is just emblematic of enjoying, of indulging in Taiva Solom Haza, it'll never satisfy. It'll never satisfy the cravings of the soul, of really of the person. But it says the Medrash in Kohelis, Kol Amala Adam Lefiu, Amr Vishmuel, Kol Mashi Yamal Adam, Visagel Mitzos Maisim Tombolam Haza, Eino Maspik Lehevel Hayotze Mitoch Piu. No matter how much Torah and mitzvos a person accomplishes in this world, it still doesn't justify the breath within him. In other words, no matter how much you learn, not no matter how much you fress and eat and enjoy and indulge of Taiva Solom Haza, there's a part of us called an neshama that can't even be satiated by the sustenance that actually satiates the neshama, namely mitzvos and ma'asim tovim, Torah and mitzvos. It can't fill up. Look what he writes: V'gam nefesh lo simalei, shah nefesh yodas. The soul knows kol mashihi amela. No matter how much it works, la'atzmahi amela. Again, different ways to learn the Medrash, but we'll read it like this: She, the neshama, is working for herself, and yet, as much as it's trying to fill up, lekach eino sveya lo Torah v'lo ma'asim tovim. But the soul is infinite, like Purim itself. Right? The soul is infinite. Like we learned, Purim is lanetzach. The soul is infinite, and therefore no matter how much Torah you feed it, no matter how many mitzvahs and maisim tovim you feed it, it's not satiated, it's not satisfied. And the Medrash gives a mashal, a beautiful mashal. Mashal lema hadavar doma. To what can this be compared? Li'ironi shenasa bas malachim. To an ironi. We'll translate ironi as a simple, simple villager who married a princess. Imagine, it's a good shidduch, no? You're wondering, how'd this guy get such a shidduch? A mashal of a villager, a simple villager who married a princess. Im yavila kol masha ba'olam, einan chashuvin laklom. If you were to bring her everything in the world, it would be considered nothing to her. What could this guy bring her? He's going to buy her a diamond ring. She's like, I'm a princess. I have diamond rings. He's going to buy her flowers. My father's gardens are much more beautiful. She has everything. She's the wealthiest princess in the world. What on earth could this guy possibly bring her that she doesn't have? So no matter what he brings her, kol masha ba'olam, einan chashuvin laklum. It means nothing to her. It's worthless to her. Lama, why, says the Medrash, shehi bas melech. Because she has access to everything. There's nothing she doesn't have. Kach hanefesh. The same thing is true with the soul. If you bring the soul all of the ma'adane olam, all the most delightful things of this world, and by the way, it's not talking about the pleasures of this world. The first part of the Medrash is talking about mitzvos and ma'asim tovim. if you give your neshama the good stuff, the real good stuff, the madane olam, the best of this world, mitzvah samaisim tovim, eino klom la, the neshama says, not satisfied. Lama? Why? Shehi min ha'olyonim. Because the neshama says, I've had better. I have access. I come from a higher place. I come from the upper echelons. I don't... So, Chava, you know what's strange about this medrash? Ask a kash on this medrash. Ask a kash on this princess. Ask a kash on the princess. No? Ask a kash on her. Why'd you marry this guy? Can you imagine? She marries this Ironi, and then she says, if you were to bring me everything in the world, einu chashuvin laklum, means nothing to me. So what does she want from this relationship? Why did she marry this guy? He can't do anything for her. He can't bring her anything, no? A funny thing. Why did she marry him? What's the answer? There's only one answer. Has to be only one answer. Why'd she marry him? What does she want? What does she want from this? What does he want? He can't give her anything. Those are very harsh words. It means nothing to her. So what does she want? What does she want? She wants him. In some way that can't be described in words. It's not a tangible thing. Right? She wants that love. She wants that partnership. She wants him. She doesn't want stuff. I have all the stuff in the world. What she's celebrating is what? You can offer me something I don't have, which is you. That's the only thing you can bring to the table that I don't have, which is you. And she likes that. That's a chiddush for her. That's exciting for her. By the way, if she would have married a prince who also has everything, that wouldn't have been so exciting for her. She wants some chiddush in her life. She wants something new in her life. She wants to experience something she hasn't experienced before. So you know what she's going to do? She marries a simple villager. And now... she's got a lot of new, right? A lot of new things happening. Everyone's talking. I can't believe she married that guy. I can't believe that she married that guy. However, that chiddush, that novelty, is so much what's happening on Purim. Because on Purim, it's Klal Yisrael in a low place. It's Klal Yisrael being handed over to their enemies. It's Klal Yisrael not really being able to bring Hashem much. And yet HaKadosh Baruch Hu still saying, after it's all said and done, right? We saw the Chassam Sofer as they're parting at Achashverosh's party. Hashem says, I still choose you. And you'll say, well, maybe it's because we bring you mitzvahs and mitzvahs and tofu, because we bring you Torah, because we bring you tefillos. At the end of the day, we just learned, we don't bring Hashem anything. Lakel gomer alai. So what does Hashem want? You know what Hashem wants? Hashem wants you. Hashem wants the essence of you, not any particular thing that you do. And therefore, on Purim, you can be a Jew who's in a state of ad lo yada, who doesn't have much clarity about what he can bring to the table, and Hashem still chooses you. Hashem says, I still pick you. That's an unbelievable thing. Look at the last source. V'chol ze einenu shovali. I read this medrash and I said, you know what? It reminds me of what Haman said. When this princess says, everything you bring me is worthless to me. Sounds a lot like one of our great enemies, no? Haman says, kol ze einenu shovali. Haman rattles off, I have all this money, I have all this power, I have a wife, I have friends, I have people who respect me, I have a big family, I have children. And Haman says, but this one Jew, this one Mordechai, who doesn't respect me, kol ze einenu shovali. It's all worthless to me. It's all worthless to me. Anytime I see Mordechai sitting b'shar ha-melech. So I want to end with a vart that I heard from my brother Davidol, Rav Davidol Shlita. He said a great vart. He said, imagine if Haman had yechidus with the Lubavitcher Rebbe. Yeah? What would the Rebbe say to Haman? Imagine Haman sent a letter to the Rebbe, you know? People would write the Rebbe all the time. He'd get sacks of mail. He was his address was the address in New York that received the most mail, they say. Yeah? What would happen if he gets a letter in the mail from Haman, and in this letter, Haman is lamenting as he's... One breath, he's saying, I have all this, I have this, I have this, I have this, and yet, kol ze, I have so much, and yet, kol ze einenu shovali. What did the Rebbe say to Haman? Let's put on Lubavitcher Rebbe eyes for a second. You know, the Rebbe was always able, the Rebbe was mamash, an ish vina hafacha. The person said that the Rebbe was so sensitive to language. What would he say to Haman when Haman says, v'chol ze einenu shovali? How would the Rebbe reinterpret, that's what the Rebbe always did. He didn't say different than you. He showed you that you were saying truth. You just didn't understand how you were saying it. What would the Rebbe say to Haman? He'd say, Haman, listen. He says, you're right. He would say, you're right. You're talking right. V'chol zeh, eino shoveli. Kol zeh, what's zeh? What's zeh? All of this, what's the zeh? The zeh are the things, right? The zeh are the things that we think we need to bring to Hashem in order to win over HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So if I want Hashem to like me, I have to bring him tefillin in the morning, and I have to bring him davening, and I have to bring him a bracha before I drink my coffee, and I have to bring Hashem a daf gemara, and I have to bring Hashem tzedakah, and I have to bring Hashem tzitzis, I have to bring Hashem all these things. But at the end of the day, even the neshama, which is satiated by Torah and mitzvahs, because my neshama is my chelik alokam imal, it's the godliness within me, it can't be satisfied with that. So why did this princess marry the villager? Because in some mysterious way, she likes that chiddush. That's exciting. The malachim and shemayim can bring Hashem much better gifts. So why did Hashem pick us? Why did Hashem decide to take a neshama and put it in a guf? What does Hashem want from that? Why would Hashem take a nefesh and a guf that they should live together? What does Hashem want for that? It's fun for Hashem. It's funny. It's silly. It's been a hafachu. It's the simcha of Purim, right? It's the schok of Adar. It's the laughter of Adar. It's such a ridiculous idea. But the princess likes that. That's fun for her, right? Because she's used to all the royal stuff. It's exciting for her to marry an Ironi. Haman v'chol zeh. He says to Haman, "You're right. V'chol zeh." Haman, you think your life, your worthiness is because you're rich, because you're powerful, because you got a good shidduch, you married Zeresh, you had a lot of kids, that's how you're making it. Hashem says to Haman, Levavos Rebbe would say to Haman, a tzaddik would say to Haman, v'chol zeh, if you think your life is valuable because of the zeh of your life, that's not it. That's eino shoveli. That's not the it. So what's the it? The it is li, what you are to me. I choose you. That's what I want. That's what I want. That's the chiddush that we're trying to tap into on Purim. And the only way to get there is by saying, Hashem, I'm letting go. I'm letting you build the Mishkan. I'm letting you finish the job. And I'm trying to inculcate that into my Hashkafa Sachayim. That Lakel Gomer Alai. Hashem, you always finish the job for me. That's the chiddush, that a guf and a nefesh should be able to come together, to live together. That's such a radical chiddush. Tzaddikim say that guf plus nefesh is gematria al mikra megillah, 519. Because you ask it, why would a guf? What is? What can a guf get from a nefesh? Right? That's part of the secret of Purim. Right? Al mikra megillah. Tzaddikim say that or chadash is gematria 519. Megillah is like a new light. What can you give this princess? She has everything. What's new for her? What's exciting for her? What's interesting for her? Right? What's Megillah is mamish. The Arizal describes Megillah as the ultimate Or Chadash, a new light. It's an old light, but it's a new light. It's the brightest light. Right? Or Chadash is gematria, I'll make her Megillah. But it's the novelty of a guf and a nefesh working together. And again, and the joke of the whole thing is that we're just faking it. We're just playing. Why do we wear costumes on Purim? With this, I'll mamish conclude. Why do we wear costumes on Purim? You know why? To remind us that our whole life, we're just actors in a play. We're just actors in a play. We don't actually have an independent existence. Right? We're just an actor in the play. On Purim, we put on a costume and remind ourselves that when I go back to working on Wall Street, I'm just an actor in a play. I'm not actually making Parnassa from working on Wall Street. I'm not actually, you know, anything because of my own independent efforts. It's all Lakel Gomer Alai. Hashem finishes the job for me, and He still rewards me on top of that. And Hashem makes it happen. Yom Kippur happens on its own. Purim happens on its own. And to feel fortunate that Hashem's taken care of us. That's it. Ad lo yada. That's the celebration. Ad lo yada. That's what we're trying to get to on Purim. That's a tikkun for Chet Ego. That's Hashruas Hashchina. That's Mishkan. That's living with HaKadosh Baruch in your life. Right? So we should be zocha. We should be zocha to eradicate that amalek part of us that thinks Tachas HaShemayim is its own world. We're not in our own independent world. Tachas Hashemayim, Hashem is here as much as He's up there. And to really feel that and to celebrate that is the avoda of Hashras Hashchina and is the avoda of Purim. All right? Questions, comments, rebuttal, hosafos, anything to add?